This episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast is brought to you by WPBoost.net. If you care about speed and conversion and SEO of your website or your clients' websites, then you better check out WPBoost.net. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz. My guest today is Fred Dust. He's a former senior partner for the design firm IDEO and founder of Making Conversation, a designer, an author, educator, consultant, trustee, and advisor to social and business leaders. And we're going to talk about his new book today called Making Conversation, Seven Essential Elements of Meaningful Communication. So Fred, thanks for joining me.
John, thank you very much. And first of all, you pronounced IDEO right, and you didn't say Fred Durst. So you're like, you're ace as far as I'm concerned.
Well, there's no O in there. So, yeah, there's no R in there. I mean,
yeah. It's like, whatever. It's you did really well.
Well, thank you. I have a lot of consonants in my last name. And so frankly, I'm sensitive, I guess, to that.
Yeah, it's true. When they're stacked up like that, it can get pretty complex.
So how does one become a conversational designer? I think it's somewhere in the book I read that you kind of sometimes go by that idea of designing conversations. I mean, how does somebody get that gig?
Yeah. And well, to be honest, I call it making conversation because I want to kind of really stress to our, like the people I talk to that we're all makers, right? So we can all make something. We may not believe it, but you probably made your bed or, it's like a lot of your listeners are often the makers as well. So people who are running small businesses are all.
You bet.
And so I want to just sort of stress one thing, which is that we've been making conversation pretty well for most of human history. And it's just that often that story doesn't get told because it's more interesting for news and it's more interesting for, politicians to basically say we're divided, that we can't. So that's a caveat. That said, I've been pretty lucky because most of my work in the realm of design, and at least in the last kind of like 10, 15 years, has really been in the design of working with governments. Like I worked with CFPB and Elizabeth Warren when she was there. I got to advise on innovation with the White House, never met Obama, but got to do some other stuff around that and large philanthropies, nonprofits, as well as business leaders, big, and when possible, small. And so what's interesting is that when I left, which was right in 2016, and it was because the last work I was doing was with the Surgeon General who was focusing on the new Surgeon General, who's also the old Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, on isolation and loneliness in America. We were working a lot on dialogue formats. So he was going to launch that, and I was working on how to kind of have conversations that could be cathartic and community building at the same time. And when I left, I was like, maybe I should write a book on this. And turns out, there was a book in it. So, and it's been interesting because, he had a book out in the spring, which is about isolation and loneliness. So I feel like it's been kind of call and answer a little bit.
So are you familiar with the book Sapiens?
Yeah. It
was kind of a big book a few years ago. And I do recall, a pretty good chunk of that talking about the art of conversation, playing a role in the development of us as species and certainly as culture. So it you reference the fact that it's been around forever. So talk a little bit about, how that became a differentiator, I guess, for us.
Yeah, well, John, that's a great example because he talks a lot about interspecial connection and or enslavement, depending on what's there. And what's interesting for me is that if you go back to even pre-verbal communication, right? And one thing you should just know is that all the literature that says, pre-literate societies didn't have love and things like that, that's all been disproven. So right now we know that love and mourning has existed for millennia.
It just didn't have poetry.
That's exactly. Who knows? They might have had some other form. But what's interesting is that even pre-verbal, it was like hand signals and communicating with canines that allowed us to be predators. It was the ability to communicate with bovines from bovina that helped us be harvesters and farmers. And so in fact, we really have been in conversation, not just with ourselves, but interspecially for as long as we've existed. Like, conversation isn't always what we think it is. Boy, we're going meta, John. Yeah. Right off the bat, but I love it.
That's all right. I think it's a fascinating topic. But so in doing research for actually my last book, I dove into a lot of mid-19th century literature. And a great deal of that literature was actually letters. I mean, people wrote letters to each other and they bound them up in books, right? And I was taken by just like, wow, they could write a letter. You know, I mean, now it's like emoji, you know, text, right? And so have we gotten bad at conversation? Like, did people at some point in time used to be really good at it and now we're not very good at it?
Well, I think there's two stories to that. I mean, yes. And as you know, from the book, like I believe I actually don't tie that to our current technologies. I don't tie that to our phone. I tie that really tightly to television and the introduction of television into our dinner tables, right? Where suddenly the kind of one of the most fundamental conversations of our lives was interrupted and hosted by television hosts. You know, it's like the 1950 to 1954 was like a period of rapid innovation in the realm of television, because they wanted it. And then putting politics onto television, not so great, right? And then when we started putting televisions in our bedrooms, so that it was the first thing, politics was the first thing we were seeing in the morning, last thing at night, you know, that's, first of all, that's not that great for a relationship, John. Like, it's like to
sure.
So I think it's been eroded. That said, I also feel like we're relentlessly telling the story of conversations that fail. And one of the things I believe we need to be doing, and I think, John, you do this really well, is be like, no, there are many conversations that succeed. You know, it's like you do this all the time. I do it all the time. Many of your audience members are having conversations with their local communities, you know, in really interesting ways, like are the cornerstone of conversations for their local communities. So it's happening all the time. We choose to believe it doesn't.
So it's hard not to talk about any subject right now and not have it colored by what's going on in the world. We were recording this at the end of 2020. So I talked about a little bit, have we gotten bad at it? You know, do you sense a sort of nostalgic return to wanting to have those, you know, at a deeper level, partly caused by just sort of the tsunami?
Well, first of all, if it's whatever it is, nostalgic or whatever, like, yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, I think it's a really wonderful thing. And I'll just give you a little, like, I have a friend who owns the Andes Hotel, which is a small hotel, in a town just a little bit, below us. And my book launch party was him, the woman who runs the wine store, my husband and I on the front deck, like in the snow, toasting each other from 6 feet. And it was one of the best book launches I could ever imagine, because it was just like, it was this really lovely, intimate conversation. And we were all talking about how we can kind of support the local businesses and support them. And so it was a joy. I think we're really looking for those things right now. Who knows? Maybe it's a gift that we kind of have learned to really hanker for making conversation.
So this is a really cliche question. I don't ask it of authors very often, but I'm curious if there's kind of a goal. What do you want people to do more of or do a better job at because they read your book?
Yeah, I mean, well, so first of all, I want them to think about conversation as a creative act, or at least an act of making, right? So the goal is to think like, oh, this is not just something that happens, that you know, you wouldn't just, you know, do a dinner party and not make a plan, right? Like, it's like you wouldn't build a marketing plan without a plan, right? And so the hard conversations, and these aren't all conversations, John, but the really hard ones, often the ones that are about bridging difference and bridging divide, or it can be sometimes like employees, you know, it's like, how do you talk to your wait staff, or how do you, you know, it's like, well, a bunch of different kinds of ways to think about it, about really hard decisions, and should be well planned and not kind of just like sprung on people. Like, it's like conversations don't happen, they're made. And so that at the most fundamental is what I'd like people to learn. I guess at the meta, I would like for us to be telling more and more stories of how people have made good conversations in the world. I think that's really needed right now.
And you, throughout the book, equip people with, I'm going to call them your seven C's, various practices. You want to unpack a couple? I mean, we don't have time to share the whole book, but you want to maybe pick your favorite one or two C's?
Yeah. So it's like there's seven C's, and you know, it is a business book, so it has to happen. But I want to let like your people know that what's interesting is that it seems like a business book and a methodology, but it's really an approach. What I want it to be is sort of a form of inspiration for you, John, or for anyone. You don't need help to kind of think about how they could actually make conversations. So I really encourage people to kind of adapt it.
I need plenty of help. So thank you, but it's not true.
That doesn't seem like it from listening to your podcast, but I will say that one of my favorites, let's go wild card, one that I haven't really talked about that much, is clarity. So the third, if I remember correctly, the third C in the book is basically, are we being clear with each other and the terms? And just so you know, John, originally that chapter was called Talk Normal, which is even clearer, I think, than clarity. But
But it did start with C.
Yeah. I'll be honest, my publisher was like, I really want C's. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. I'll give you C's. Yeah. I can do that. You gave me a lot. So, but what's interesting is that often terminologies that we use, and this happens in marketing, this happens in business speak, like often the language we use can actually be situation. It can be can be unclear for others. And I would imagine even with some of your small businesses that are kind of like startups and like kind of like local, the language of business and the language of marketing may not be familiar to them. So like they have to learn whole new languages to make that happen. And so I often get people to say like, can you say it? Like I'm really like in the dumbest way possible. And by that, I want to say dumb is smart in my book, it's like, and that really helps. That said, if you're in a pro context and in like, so like if you're a doctor talking to another doctor, like don't talk dumb. Like it's like, we need smart there. Like that's really important. Yeah, yeah. So that's the kind of principle around clarity, which is like kind of get as simple as possible as you can. And then I think something that really, I think would be important for a lot of your listeners, is I really believe in naming things. Like, so naming the things that matter. And I'm sure that really, I'll give you an example. One of my favorite small businesses in Bovina right now is Isolation Proof Gin. And it's a small business that came up during the pandemic, and they were like, oh yeah, we were doing this, but let's instead make gin. And so I'm sending it to everyone as thank you gifts this year. And you know, that's a good name, right? It's like it's called Bovina Spirits is the name of the business. And then it's Isolation Proof Gin, which really kind of, first of all, you know, it's clever, but it also kind of ties you right to where the moment is. Like you'll always know when it came from, right? Yeah, get clever. It should be fun and it should be engaging and it should be catchy. Like I promise you, you won't remember, you won't forget Isolation Proof Gin. I don't think, at least.
And that, yeah.
The guy who owns that business, Jake, is awesome. He's a really good marketer. He's probably more of a marketer than a gin maker, but his gin is exceptional. So
yeah, well, that's good. So I'll tell you that since you picked clarity, I'm going to pick, and actually just wrote listening, but I think it's creative listening is the C part of that. That's the one I actually find the hardest.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm surprised you say that because like that's what you do. Like it's like, you know.
You're right. It, in a lot of ways, it is what I do, but now you've challenged me. So now I have to think about why that is. And I think a lot of it is, when I'm doing this, I'm actively engaged in the process, but right. You know, there might be times when I am talking to somebody in not such an active way. And I just really want them to be over so I can say what I want to say. I think that probably, we probably get sort of, we form that habit, don't we, sometimes?
That we do. And John, I think it's a great point. And I'm joking a little bit, but I will say it's like, you know, in this job, like, and I'm sure as you're writing and doing your research, like, it's like, you're doing that to learn, you know, you're listening, you listen with a way that kind of feels like it's kind of joyful and you're kind of engaged in a different way. And the problem for us is like, and this is really true in the business context, is often the way we speak about listening is as though it's a super chore. So it's like the boss basically says, okay, I'm going to give everybody a good listening to. Like, which is like, it sounds punitive. Like, oh great, the boss is going to listen to me. Like, I like, yeah, I like, how far can I run? Right. And so it's like, or the mayor, it's like I've talked to somebody who's a campaign manager for a mayor who basically was like, he had no choice but just to listen to people and what they said and take it. And I was like, well, that's not listening. That's just like enduring. And so I want us to think about like, And often management techniques will teach you about active listening, which is just kind of nodding and saying, yeah, go on. And that's not really listening. And so especially in small businesses, you need to be listening to your customers. You need to be listening to your employees. It's like, you know, one of the best marketing things you can do is kind of being in conversation with your customers. Like that's why people want to come to small businesses. You know, it's kind of center to it. And I will say one other thing, because right now I'm a small business. When I'm promoting my book, I'm relentlessly promoting other small businesses, right? So it's like, I'm giving it to all the different small businesses in my community, and I'm like promoting them. So like being in conversation and being in with other businesses can really help.
Does that make sense? It's interesting. We do a lot of research. Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And I was going to say, to validate that, we do a lot of research trying to help people get to a core message, you know, for their marketing. And it's never about the product or the service, you know. I mean, what we interview their customers, we look at their Google reviews, and time again, we show them, they say you show up when you say you're going to, and that you clean up the job site, you know. It's like, that's the stuff they care about. That's stuff you should be talking about.
That's so right. That's like, it's so right. And you know, it's interesting, like I'm doing these little WhatsApp content pieces right now that are going to be coming out soon. And what's interesting about it is that I want to do one on how to talk to service people. Like, it's like, so how to treat service people like they're humans and not just some machine that's like cleaning your house or cleaning like your waste site or whatever those things are. And I think it's something that we as consumers have to be good at, like is treating the people who do service work like they're also human. Cause by the way, they're human. It's like, so yeah, it goes two ways on that one.
And now let's hear a word from our sponsor. The website has become the hub of your business. But if that website loads slowly, people, visitors, they won't tolerate that. And guess what? Neither will Google. It's become an increasingly important factor in ranking your websites, how fast your site loads. If you want to find out if you've got an issue with this, if you want to find out how to fix this, check out WPBoost.net and see if they can help you identify how to make your site load faster. That's WPBoost.net. So I have two more things I want to cover. So, you know, the topic of authenticity has been, you know, just so batted around in marketing circles, probably for the last decade, really, you know, because with social media, all of a sudden it's like, hey, we could put our hair down and, you know, look like who we really are. But I think the opposite of that sometimes happens is it gives people the opportunity to be who they're really not or who they want you, who they, you know, that's like when you talk about using all this jargon and complex language, a lot of that's because we're trying to sound like something.
Yeah.
So I really, this idea of clarity, you know, really rings a bell for me, because I think that's, if you're willing to do that, that's how you're going to be authentic.
Oh my God. I can I just tell you a funny thing? I remember not so long ago, I was in Melbourne, like maybe a year and a half ago, doing a lecture to travel executives, and these two amazing Russian travel workers came up to me at a party, and they were like, oh, we just looked at your Instagram, you have the perfect lifestyle. And I was like, it's not a lifestyle, it's a life. and it really is, it's a life. And so I would say, you know, I encourage showing where you are, showing who you are as a human. Like, it's like, I think you'll be happier. You know, it's like the world will be happier. They'll identify with you in a different way. And so my Instagram is, it's still my dog. It's still like a good meal. You know, it's like, yeah, it's probably tagged in some way to my book in one way or another, but it's like, it's still me. It hasn't changed in any way.
So let's end up with another sort of moment in time question. How does digital communication get in the way of some of what we're talking about, but then obviously maybe more specific, all this virtual that I think is not going away.
Yeah, no, I agree. Oh, and like that relates to that, but also is interesting. Like, I will say that for small businesses and like you've never had a better moment to know your consumer, because if you kind of really engage with them through social media, then you can actually see what they need and what they matter. And I'm sure that's something you talk about all the time, John, is like, it's like you, there's consumer insights that can be at your fingertips that are really remarkable. I mean, for you, I'm sure it's really useful. You know, I'm on the fence. So if you had told me a year ago, if you talked to me, I'd been like, yeah, put the phone down. You know, it's like, and I'm still pretty much like, put the phone down, at least during, like, don't have the phone in the room during dinner, like, you know, things like that. But I do know that a lot of really intimate and important conversations are happening through the phone. And people are falling in love via text, or people are just picking up the phone and calling each other, which, don't forget, your phone is a phone. So it's like, we can actually have this conversation via phone. And often that becomes even more intimate. Like in many cases, I don't know, John, like what happened for you, but like in my generation, I think we're pretty close. Like, it's like, I fell in love over the phone. Like that's how I knew. It was like long late night talks where I was just like, oh wow, this person is enchanting. You know, so it's like, so I don't want to just kind of like diss on new technology. Like we're engaging in a way that frankly, you were probably already engaging this way beforehand. I can't imagine everybody was flying to your studio, right?
No, yeah, I've in terms of my working habits, I haven't changed a bit this year.
Yeah, I believe that. So it's like, you know, and for me this morning, it was really funny. I reached into my pocket, and I was like, usually I would reach in my pocket and I would find plane tickets and business cards, and I found candy corns and a ferry ticket, and I was like, oh yeah, those are some great conversations I had with like parents and their kids during Halloween, you know, and like, you know, it's like, so as good as far as I'm concerned. So,
well, and one of the things I've noticed is that, because I was using Zoom probably for 4 or 5 years, before all of this happened, I've gotten better at using Zoom, and I think sort of being forced to do it now and realizing, hey, this is the only conversation I might have with this person, or only format I might have with this person, I feel like I'm way more engaged.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, I'm almost feeling like, and so there's this one-on-one, but it's like, I have my team, I have to say, I have like a bit of an army, because I have a bunch of people building a curriculum. I have people building a pitch for, you know, television, like whatever. So it's a bunch of stuff. And my team has never been closer. And it's partially because we mostly were formed post pandemic. And so we've been in places where it's been really intimate, you know, like if my team has a bad day, if someone on my team is like about to thinks they're going to get evicted, I'll stop everything. And I'm like, okay guys, let's work on this person's problem and see if we can fix it. And we can get that fixed in like 10 minutes and then go on to the rest of our work. And that's the way it works. So I think in a lot of ways, if you build the right constraints, and in the book, I mean, and frankly, we can just send you an excerpt. There's a little section that's on the four ways to manage hard conversations over Zoom during the pandemic, which literally we can toss your way if you want it. That way you really don't have to buy the book. You can just read that. And it basically, let the human in right now. You know, it's like see people. It's really important to do that.
Yeah, and I really saw a lot of, one of the things that was painfully clear, I think, were the relationships that businesses had previously with their customers really became clear when, you know, it was like, this business might go out of business, you know, and all of a sudden customers cared about that because of the relationship they had.
That's right. And I mean, remember, like I live in a very rural community. And so I would say that like everyone who could was basically like, you know, I was reaching out to the people who Because like we have 100 acres, it's like it's not easy to navigate on our own. I mean, it's a ramshackle like farm from like 220 years ago. It's like nothing's easy to navigate on your own, and so there's a lot of people who help us. And we were just reaching out, being like, "Can we pay you a year in advance? Can we do, you know?" Because it's like I think we don't want our communities to fail, and so I think that's a beautiful thing that's happening.
Yeah, totally agree. So, Fred, tell us where we can find more about your work and certainly pick up a copy of Making Conversation.
Well, you can go to my website, makingconversation.com, and there's a portal that you can buy at any of your bookstores that you like. But you can also buy from your favorite local bookstore or Amazon. It's like anywhere you can find. And you can buy it or you like borrow it. I just say pick it up from somebody. But it's more important that you read it than it is that you buy it. So.
The local bookstores, you know, not all of them, but fortunately many of them have really upped their game, you know, in the online space. And so they're you may not be able to get it this afternoon, but
yeah,
but you can certainly get it. I remember I have a little bookstore here that I always go to, and I remember when they were first trying to figure that out, it was like 3 weeks to get a book, you know.
Well, yeah, and John, you know, honestly, I'll just say one call out, because like one of my favorite kind of local businesses is that, like, you know, I've traveled a lot most of my life, and like independent bookstores saved my life, because it's like when you were alone in a city and you didn't have anything to do, like going and just browsing books was always the most amazing thing to do. So really, given the nature of your podcast, just go support your small local bookstores.
Well, and I concur. My favorite was even bonus was a used bookstore. Even
better. Yeah. Oh my God. I could lose days. And it's probably what like kept me from like having an affair or something like that. Like, because I was like, oh, I can be distracted by books. Like that was a really good thing. So.
Well, this was fun. Thanks, Fred, for stopping by the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. And hopefully next time I'm up in upper New York, we'll run into each other.
Yeah, it's and I really enjoy your podcast. So thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it, John.